Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always, Corey Waldron and special guest, managing editor of Clips Nation, Robert Flom. What's up, guys?
Not much. How are you doing?
Pleasure to have you on, Rob, to talk some Los Angeles basketball. We're not talking Lakers. We're talking Clippers.
We're talking Clippers. Before we talk about next season, we'll look back at last year. You know, obviously Clippers 42-40, missed the playoffs, big news trading Blake Griffin, you know, a ton of injuries across the board. What were your thoughts on last year with the Clippers?
It was a fun year. It was an exciting year. I think fans were pretty disappointed that they didn't, that they kind of got stuck in no man's land. They didn't make the playoffs and they didn't get any, you know, high draft picks, but it was a fun team to watch. It was a really likable team. And I think fans generally had a good time, more than they actually had during the past couple years of the Lob City era. I know I had a fun time writing about the team. It was a good year. And I think this year's honestly going to be kind of similar.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of interesting moments. Obviously, Blake Griffin getting dealt was a shocker. I mean, not a complete shock, because I didn't know there was rumors that he might have been dealt, but where he ended up was shocking. I think Tobias Harris is a nice little building block to have going forward. The Patrick Beverley injury sucked, but obviously, hopefully he comes back and he can be that tenacious defender that we know he is. I mean, we just saw the end of Lob City, basically. Last year was the final knockdown of – you know, that little 6-year stint they had. You know, Lou Williams, they got him on a really nice deal. And he was incredible last year. He had a 50-point game, right, against the Warriors last season.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That was one of the few Clipper games I actually tuned into and watched. And, you know, when he gets going, he is really fun to watch. But it was a solid year for the Clippers. And they're doing like a soft retool instead of a hard rebuild.
What were your thoughts on the Griffin trade, Rob? Like, what were your feelings about it? It kind of came out of nowhere. We talked about it on the Pistons pod, but I kind of want to get the Clippers perspective.
Yeah, so when it first happened, it was, you know, it was obviously pretty shocking. You know, I thought there were a couple rumors that he'd been, that they'd offered him for, I believe, like Carl Anthony Towns or something. So I think people kind of knew he was on the block and the Clippers were feeling out what his value was. But I don't think anybody would have guessed that he would be traded to the Pistons. It just didn't seem like a team that would trade for him. In hindsight, it makes sense. You know, they really need a guy to build around. They're struggling to retain their fan base. You know, they have all these issues with attendance and marketing and stuff. But after the initial shock wore off, I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was a pretty good deal because his contract is really long and really expensive, and he's injured all the time. And I think they, you know, they got a good return. And then once I actually saw Tobias Harris play and I saw that they would be able to keep that Pistons protected first round pick, it made a good trade into like a great one. I think in hindsight, I'd probably give it like an A or an A minus. I think it was kind of a steal of a trade. I wouldn't necessarily think the Pistons were idiotic for doing it, because I can see it from their perspective as well. But from the Clippers' perspective, it was a really, really smart move that was really able to send the franchise in a new direction.
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact, too, that the Clippers were able to get out from underneath Blake Griffin's contract. Obviously, he just recently signed that and everything else, but I still don't think that contract's going to age well when he gets into the latter part of his career. And now the Clippers have flexibility. And as you mentioned, Tobias Harris, I mean, he's, you know, him and Victor Oladipo were the two guys that Magic let go in recent memory. And both these guys had turned into really good, young, and talented players.
Yeah, I think the Clippers definitely be happy with the return. But talking about being happy, what was the highlight of last season?
There were a couple. I think, you know, the game that was already mentioned where Lou Williams scored 50 and the Clippers beat the Warriors for the first time in several years, that was definitely a highlight. I think what got lost in the whole the Rockets-Clippers game where, you know, they attacked the Clippers' locker room, that was a highlight on, like, social media and stuff. But the Clippers beat them. And that was considered like a big game. This was in January. The Clippers were surging back to over 500. Things seemed to be coming together for them. They were able to beat the Rockets. It was a very intense, you know, the teams were snarling at each other all game. And it was really, that was a high point, was that game, forgetting the locker room antics afterwards. And then I think the final one was the game where they came back from about 18 down late in the third quarter against the Nuggets behind a massive game from Boban Marjanovic. I think those three games were kind of the individual highlights. If I had to go with one, I'd say it was probably the Rockets game. just because it was really the only one that got them much media attention. And that's something the Clippers actually legitimately need. So in that sense, it was a highlight in a couple different ways.
Yeah, for me, the highlight is the Lou Williams 50-point game. Mm-hmm. And probably some of the passes by Milos. Someone say his last name for me before Tadosic. I butcher it. Tadosic. He had some really nice no-look passes. He was like, I love no-look passes. Probably my favorite aspect of any NBA play is when someone throws a beautiful pass without looking. And he had like three last year. It's just like, how do you know that guy's going to be there? So for me, between those two and then seeing Tobias Harris again, the new leading man in Los Angeles, those three things combined.
Yeah, Lou Will's play, I think he played at like an all-star level, like you guys mentioned, had that great game against the Warriors, just had some really big games. It was fun to watch. And also like a shout out to a lot of the G League guys and the two-way guys they called out throughout the season. Thought that's impressive when you deal with all these injuries, you're able to bring guys in that can help you compete. And like Robert said, kind of make the team more fun. But biggest disappointment of last year?
I think it has to be, I mean, I think big picture you could look at Blake Griffin's tenure with the team ending the way it did with kind of like acrimony. He felt like he'd been promised a long-term role in the Clippers and he was traded and he didn't feel good about it. A more tangible disappointment would probably be the play of Danilo Gallinari. He was the Clippers' big free agent signing last summer. He only played 20 games. In those 20 games, he was only good in about five or six of them. He was pretty bad last season. And honestly, I mean, I think that the two are connected. If Gallinari had been healthy and had been playing better, the Clippers themselves might have been better. They might have decided to keep Blake because originally the way they got Gallinari was promising like this big three front court of him, Blake, and DeAndre. And while I don't necessarily think that's a great fit, if Gallinari had been healthier or playing better, that might have actually worked out, or we could at least have seen, you know, some potential there. But instead, he was injured the entire year, basically, just did not ever string together more than a couple good games. And yeah, that was probably the biggest disappointment. Though I will say Lou Williams not making the All-Star team was definitely a disappointment, because I think you could go and check the record books, but I think I actually wrote the very first piece last year on why Lou Williams should be an All-Star. It was in early to mid-January, and I took a lot of flack for it, but I stand by it, and I still think he actually should have made it over Paul George, but yeah.
Well, and it kind of sucked the fact that Jimmy Butler didn't even want to be there. And then
oh, yeah. That was horrible. I understand it from Butler's perspective. You know, his team was actually in the playoff race. He wanted to rest the knee, but yeah, it was not fun.
And considering, you know, his coach gives him no breaks, but Corey, biggest disappointment for you last season?
For me, it's gotta be the Gallinari signing. Me and Nick, I think we're both, Nick, we're really down on this signing heading into last year. It felt like a lot of money for a guy who can't really play defense. He has to play the power forward. And initially, Blake Griffin obviously was the power forward, so this guy was going to be playing small forward. And as we know, with the injury history he's had, he just didn't stay healthy all year. It felt like he was always hurt. He played only 21 games. I think he got hurt, and he came back and got hurt within like the next week mm-hmm. of him coming back. And I just think this contract going forward is going to be an issue. I just don't see this guy staying healthy.
Yeah, spot on with you guys. I think Gallinari, anytime you have a big free agent signing and he only plays 21 games and it's not great and you're expecting bigger things out of him, it's definitely a disappointment. Moving on to this year's ranking, the Clippers are coming in at number 18. Do you think this is fair, too high, too low? What are your thoughts?
I think that's honestly, looking at your rankings, I have them open. It's pinned to your Twitter account. I think it's honestly quite fair. I'm looking at the teams above and below them. I think that you can make an argument. I think they're better than the Heat, who are 17. But really, I mean, I don't think they're better than any of the other teams above them. I think that's actually quite fair. I'd probably have them above the Heat because I'm not a believer in the Heat. But they don't have any star players. I think when Clippers fans get peeved this year about, like, why aren't we ranked high? We're not projected to make the playoffs, this and that. I mean, one, it's just that the West is great. But the other is that the Clippers, for all that, you know, Lou Williams and Tobias Harris did last year, neither of them is truly, like, a star-level player. Maybe Tobias Harris gets there this year. But he wasn't quite at that level last year. And every team above them in the West has, like, a bona fide star, superstar player, or multiple of them in most cases, honestly. So I think it's pretty fair to have them there. I don't think many people, if any, are projecting them to make the playoffs, and, you know, 16 teams make the playoffs. So them being in that 17 to 19 range feels just about correct for me.
Yeah, I think this is pretty fair. You can make the argument they might be a slightly better team than the Miami Heat. But as we know, the Western Conference kind of controls the top 15 currently on the OTG power rankings. And this team probably does fall somewhere between that, you know, 8 and 12 range in the West. So I think it's fair to start, especially with some of the question marks they have, because, you know, it's Tobias Harris and Lou Williams as your offensive options. And then, you know, it gets kind of questionable after that.
Yeah, I think it's fair going to the season. You know, it's not, they could go up a few spots, maybe down a few spots, depending on what happens. But looking at the offseason, this year's additions, we'll start with the draft. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 11th overall, you know, great energy, good defense, playmaking. The jumper is a little bit of a concern, but some people had him as the best guard in the draft. What are your thoughts on him at 11 overall?
I loved him at 11 overall. I thought he was a top 10 prospect. I did not have him as the best guard. I still stand for Trae Young. Who I had as like a top three prospect, but Shai is really, really good. I don't think he's going to be a star, but I think he's one of those guys who's going to be like a high level starter for a number of years. He's long. He has good defensive instincts. He's a pretty good passer. He's not an incredible one, which I think is the best thing about Trae Young. But he's just a very good overall player. His shot mechanics are definitely a bit wonky, but in terms of them actually dropping, he shot pretty well from mid-range in college, and on limited attempts he actually shot well from three. So I think the touch is there. I think you know, there are lots of NBA players who do not have the prettiest shots but are still good shooters, and that could be Shai. He definitely needs to work on speeding up his release. It had a bit of a hitch in it in summer league. But he's still really, really young. He has years and years ahead before that becomes like a true worry of whether or not he can actually shoot. I think he could be a guy who defends multiple positions. He can play on ball or off ball. And in summer league, I mean, I was really surprised at how good a ball handler he was. He doesn't have the fancy dribble moves like a Kyrie Irving or a Jamal Crawford, but he can really, really break down his man. He's super quick. He gets to his spots, and he's a very, very good finisher. So, honestly, I think really the biggest weakness is lack of athletic upside. He's not going to just destroy people in that sense, whether, you know, finishing around the basket or defensively, which might prevent him from becoming a top-tier offensive player on either end, and then the shot. But honestly, he's really well-rounded, and getting a guy like that at 11 is just a very, very good pick.
Yeah, I was really high on Alexander going into the draft. One of the few guys who caught my eye, you know, 6'6", along his wingspan. I was kind of hoping the Hornets, that was going to be like the Hornets, you know, go-to guy. But obviously the Clippers got him. And I think it's a solid move. I don't know necessarily what his role is going to be going forward, if he's going to be kind of like that playmaking point guard. So he kind of does play a point guard role. But I think it was a really good pick for them at 11.
And a few picks later, Jerome Robinson, 13th overall, you know, solid scorer and shooter, solid D, you know, can force it at times. What were your thoughts on drafting him?
I was not a Jerome Robinson fan. I think the Clippers reached. I know in the days after the draft, all this stuff came about there were other teams in the teens who wanted to pick him, and he like really impressed during draft day workouts and stuff. You know, I'm no draft expert. I'm really not. Like, I do a fair amount of research leading up to the draft. I get like into statistics and do some like correlations between success in the NBA and college stats and stuff. And he didn't really pair well by those. I think just by the eye test, he's not really, he doesn't really fit the mold of like a great modern NBA player. I think his ideal role will be as a sixth man off the bench. He's a very good scorer. I don't think anybody's going to take that away from him. And I think his best attribute will just be that he's a very plus shooter. You know, even in summer league, his shot is very quick. It's confident from NBA three-point range. I think he should be a pretty solid outside shooter right off the bat. And, like, that's always a good thing to have. It's never bad to have good three-point shooters. But outside of that, his passing and playmaking are okay. I just don't know if it's quite good enough for him to have the ball in his hands a lot, which means he should be playing off ball more. And then there are issues about for a guy who doesn't handle the ball that much, you know, his defense can be a weakness. His lack of doing other things on the court is a bit of a minus. So I think he's a good prospect. I mean, I don't think he's horrible. I wasn't the guy who's like, you know, oh, he's, there are some people I know who didn't think he was like a first round draft pick or like should have been picked late in the second or something. That was not me, but I thought he was more of a guy who should go in the 20s, probably late 20s, to be honest. And it just wasn't a great pick for me, especially since there are several guys available who I really, really liked. Troy Brown, Lonnie Walker to a lesser extent, and even Michael Porter, who I really can't stand just from what I've seen and heard about him. I think rolling the dice on him probably would have been a better gamble, but the Clippers are really, really, really into personality, and they want model citizens. They want guys who will work hard, be humble, all that kind of stuff. And again, not Michael Porter Jr. So I understand why they went with Jerome, but that was not a good pick for me. I was pretty disappointed with that. But he seems to be a hard worker. Every report I've heard about him is that, you know, he's a great kid. He's shown up with most of the other young guys in workouts this summer. And I think, you know, Jerry West, you have to give him the benefit of the doubt. But I think if it was any other person drafting him, it would have gotten a lot more bad press.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know a lot about Jerome Robinson going into the draft. Most of my knowledge comes right from, you know, March Madness and just like the top schools. So, I mean, the one thing I noticed just looking at Jerome Robinson's stats in college is the fact that he got better every year. You know, he shot 42% his first couple years. Then he shot 48% his junior year, 40% from three. His points per game went up from 11 to 18 to 20. So like you said, offensively, I think this could definitely be an offensive punch for this Clippers team off the bench, whether that's a six man or, you know, a seventh man off the bench, even depending on where Lou Williams ends up starting or you know, not starting. But I think this is definitely a guy they could rely on for some offense off the bench, but I don't know how his career develops.
Yeah, and most of the mocks, I saw him later in the first, but I think when you have two early first-round picks, you kind of can get away with maybe taking a reach with the second one. But moving on to trades, they made they traded Austin Rivers for Marcin Gortat. What are your thoughts on him? Obviously an expiring deal, solid big. He did decline last year. What do you think he's going to bring to the Clippers?
Yeah, and I think that trade was not the greatest. Again, I understand why they did it. The roster is super imbalanced. They have all these guards, all of whom kind of need playing time, Rivers among them, and they really needed a big man who could start, play 20 minutes, replace DeAndre Jordan. And they got that with Marcin Gortat. Again, like you said, he declined a lot last year. He's declined a little bit the previous couple years. You know, he went from kind of an above-average starter to an average starter to a below-average starter. And now, like, I think realistically he should be coming off the bench. For the Clippers, that doesn't make sense because they have Montrezl Harrell, who is kind of more effective off the bench, even though he's going to be playing more minutes than Gortat. But I think Gortat will play 20 to 25 minutes a game. He'll do a bunch of stuff in the pick and roll. You know, he's going to set hard screens. He can still rebound at least, you know, okay for a big man. Defense is not going to be very good. But, you know, I think he's a reasonable stopgap starter. Again, like, I think Austin Rivers is better just in a pure vacuum. I think he's a better player than Gortat now, and he's younger. So I think in just a straight up trade asset sense, it was a bad trade. I think they should have at least gotten a second round pick or some kind of asset from the Wizards or from a third team or whatever in exchange. But I can see why they did. And I think Gortat will be a nice addition to the team. You know, he's definitely a guy who I can see Milos and Lou Williams running a lot of pick and roll with and finishing around the basket.
I don't know. I mean, it makes sense for a team as like a stopgap. I agree with that. But I mean, Gortat to me is terrible. I watching him last year in Washington, it just wasn't good. You know, he actually doesn't finish around the basket very well anymore. He rebounds subparly. There's really no defense. He's very flat-footed now and just slow. And obviously the locker room issues that were going on between him and John Wall weren't great. You know, obviously that could just be the situation. Tensions have always been kind of high in the Wizards locker room. So that could have just been a, you know, a one-stop issue. But Yeah, it seems like he thinks he's more than he is at this point in his career. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, you know, you're losing DeAndre Jordan and you need someone to, you know, play at the center position. So having a vet like Gortat isn't the worst thing. But it's a clear downgrade for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, you need a veteran. You need somebody at center, like Rob mentioned. There is a roster imbalance, so in that aspect, it makes sense. They also traded for Jonathan Motley from Dallas. You know, flyer and a young big, had some decent moments in Dallas. What were your thoughts on him?
I really like Jonathan Motley. I mean, I don't think he's going to, you know, become some Draymond Green-esque steal, but I think he's like an NBA player. He had phenomenal stats in the G League, and when he played in the NBA, I mean, to be fair, it was at the end of the year, and April games for tanking teams, which is what the Mavs were, are never really all that useful in evaluating players. I mean, he was getting a lot of minutes on a team that really was not trying to win games, but when he played, he put up stats, and he has at least, you know, the size and length to be just a reserve big man. Like, I don't know if he's ever going to be more than that, but considering they literally gave up nothing for him, getting a guy who can at least be your third center, and if you have an injury, step in for games here and there, play 10 to 15 minutes and not embarrass himself, like, that's a good deal. I don't think he's a guy who's going to set the world on fire, but I do actually, he's been working on his jump shot, and he actually hit, I think he was at like 30% from three in the G League, which is not great, but like that's a base to build upon. So maybe if he develops his shot, he could be a little bit more than just like an energy, you know, garbage bucket big man. But I think he's an NBA player at the very least. And considering it was the rest of the deal was just a little bit of cash, it was like $50,000, and then swapping international players' rights who are never coming over to the NBA, I think it was a very good deal to bring him in.
Yeah, it's low risk, high reward. I think for this, you just, you know, who knows? Maybe, like you said, he develops further. He's working on his jump shot. He'd like to see that. And maybe he can be that, you know, third guy.
Looking at free agent signings, they brought over Mike Scott. You know, very nice add, solid depth, had a really nice postseason. What do you think Mike Scott brings to the team?
I think Mike Scott is a fantastic fit. I think, you know, when you get into the Clippers offseason, my biggest beef is that they kind of, I don't know if this is jumping ahead a little bit, but they went on like a kind of like, as you said at the beginning, a soft retool. You know, they're still trying to make the playoffs and remain competitive. I was more in the camp of they should not quite tank, but that they should not be signing veterans and bringing these guys in trying to win. You know, keep your veterans if you don't have good trade options. Play your young guys, you know, don't tank, don't go all out unless that becomes apparent that's what you need to do, but don't really try to be competitive either. So in one sense, I think Mike Scott, for what they got him for, which is 1 year, $4.3 million, they split the MLE with him and Lukumba Mute. I think that's a really good value signing. He was terrific for the Wizards last year. And when you go back to his last season with the Hawks that wasn't marred by, I think he had some like legal issues maybe.
Yeah, off the court stuff.
Yeah, when you go to his last season with the Hawks that didn't have that, he was pretty good that season too. I mean, I think he's like a very good reserve power forward. And like, you know, he can hit threes, which makes him a really good pairing with Montrezl Harrell, who cannot shoot at all. So you have a guy who stretches the floor. You have, you know, a Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell pick and roll is going to be like 80% of your offense with the second unit. And all you need is guys around the perimeter spotting up who can shoot. And that's what Mike Scott is best at. I wouldn't say he's good or even an average defender, but I don't think he's quite horrible on that end. And he seems to be, you know, hardworking. From what I remember, like, I think, you know, he's been pretty well liked in NBA locker rooms. He's kind of a little bit of a gunner, but he can make passes. He doesn't force things, I guess. You know, he's definitely thinking shoot first, but he's not a guy who will just chuck up shots willy-nilly. So honestly, and I think he's a very good player. I think he's a player who could get, you know, 15 minutes a game on like a playoff contender. I mean, the Wizards kind of flamed out last year, but they had the talent to be a better team, and he was a pretty key part of their squad. So I think just just looking at that move by itself, I think that was a very good signing. In terms of like the overall picture of the Clippers summer, not necessarily as big a fan.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Scott, I mean, as I mentioned when we did the Wizards one, this guy, like, didn't miss. Like, I swear, every time I watched the Wizards game and he took a mid-range jump shot or of a corner three, it was going in. He just was automatic. This was a really good signing. Definitely a guy who can come in and just play, you know, like you said, 15, 20 minutes, be instant offense. He doesn't take bad shots. He just seems to take the right shots, which is important. So I like this, especially for what they're currently going for, which I think is, you know, to be competitive and kind of start the retool.
They also signed Luka Bamute, you know, coming back to the Clippers, solid depth. I think the biggest concern for him is that shoulder and will he get healthy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that is definitely an issue. But, I mean, I don't think there's anything about the shoulder injury to suggest it would be a, have super long-term side effects. Maybe it does. But even if his offensive capabilities go down a little bit, he's still going to be a really, really good defender who can guard multiple positions. He does a lot of the little things on the court. He's a very good cutter. He plays without the ball well. And Clippers fans loved him when he was here before. It was something that, again, even a lot of the Clippers fans who wanted a full rebuild and therefore weren't happy that they're signing all these, you know, playoff veterans were still really happy that they brought him back. I mean, he's one of the ultimate high-character guys in the NBA. You know, his work with NBA Africa and bringing guys like Joel Embiid, Pascal Siakam into basketball, into the NBA. You know, you always want to have guys like that on your team. And I mean, the Clippers generally have high character guys, but, you know, he's just a very valuable piece in the locker room, on the bench. And again, that defense is really nice, especially for a team that, you know, outside of a couple guards with Pat Beverly and Avery Bradley, is not exactly chock full of high-level defenders. So he should be able to carve out quite a role and, you know, prepare for the inevitable Danilo Gallinari injury. He's a guy who can step forward and play alongside Tobias Harris very easily. But yeah, he could play alongside either of them in forward lineups. I personally think they should try going super small ball and play Gallinari at center with Harris and Mbamute at the four and the three. I don't know if we'll see that because I don't know how long Gallinari can stand up to that kind of banging, but, I think he's a phenomenal fit. I think he's just a really good player. He was an underrated part of that Rockets team last year. They really, really benefited from his ability to play defense at multiple positions and switch seamlessly. So I'm just super happy he's back.
Yeah. Abalamute is solid. Obviously, the shoulder injury is concerning. It looked like he didn't trust himself all last year in the playoffs. Just obviously he came back and then as he dunked, right, Nick? I remember you telling me that he dunked and it popped his shoulder back out.
I think it was the last game of the season against like the Lakers or something. He had come back and then he went up for a dunk and then it came back out. And then he had a couple opportunities in the postseason to dunk the ball and he decided not to because I've heard that he was like a little nervous to do that and he ended up missing the layup.
Right. So that's concerning, but if he – you know, obviously, he had all offseason to work and to get more confidence in his body. So if he's back and he's healthy, this is a solid guy. He plays tremendous defense. Obviously, as you mentioned, he played with the Clippers already in the past. So for me, this was a good move for the Clippers.
And it just feels like the Clippers filling out their roster with a lot of really solid guys in different roles and whatnot with Scott and Bamute. So I think overall, like Corey mentioned earlier, you know, a nice retool. But departure-wise, we'll talk about who they lost via trade first. Austin Rivers in the Gortat trade, and then Sam Decker they sent to Cleveland. Anything they're going to miss with these guys? Do you wish they kept them, or is fine?
I mean, I really like Austin Rivers. I think Clippers fans were kind of split on him. You know, some people really kind of regarded him fondly because he was the last young Clippers guy who seemed kind of grow up with the team. Mature, get really a lot better in his time as a Clippers uniform from when he came from the Pelicans, then Hornets, I believe, 3.5 years ago. He was not very good, and now he's a very solid, capable NBA player. Again, I think he's just much better than Marcin Gortat at this point in their careers. I was really disappointed they couldn't get anything else for him. Again, roster balancing, it made sense, but just as an asset, he's a lot more valuable, I think, than Gortat. So I think they're going to miss his outside shooting, his ability to create his own shot. Not necessarily great shots, but he can kind of get his shot off whenever he wants. His handles are, I wouldn't say tight because he has some mishaps some of the time, but his step back is really, really good. He can get that off against almost anybody. And I think he was just good for them last year. Not nearly as impactful as a Lou Williams or Tobias Harris, but he was one of their better players last year. They're going to miss him. Sam Decker was just if Gallinari wasn't the biggest disappointment, in some ways Decker was a bigger disappointment because he was just so bad. I'm not sure, just by looking at the stats, I'm not sure outside people really realize how bad he was. Like, I know when the Cavs picked him up, it's like, oh, hey, we got Sam Decker, who's this first-round pick a few years ago, and, you know, he's athletic and he's big, and it's like, no, he was so bad last year. You know, on a team that had five rookies and was calling up all these G League guys, he was the worst player to get any real minutes for them last year. I'm leaving out guys like Sean Kilpatrick, who played, like, 30 minutes or whatever. You know, of guys who were on the roster for most of the season, he was the worst player. He could not shoot. His defense came and went. He had one really nice stretch in December where he was very active as a cutter off ball. He was really playing well off Lou Williams, and he was active on defense, and he was getting all these rebounds, and he was making passes, and then just went away. And his confidence just seemed shot. You know, maybe he's able to get his confidence back in Cleveland and turn into kind of a rotation player, but the Clippers getting off his contract for next year without giving up more than, like, a few hundred thousand in cash, I think, is honestly one of the better deals of the summer. He was really bad last year.
I remember researching a little bit and seeing, I think it might have been on Clips Nation talking about how he couldn't even get minutes on the roster and that they were happy to get rid of him. But Corey, any thoughts on those two?
No, I mean, I think you missed DeAndre Jordan a little bit, but that's, you know, that's just because you've been so accustomed to having a center like that who's dependable, always healthy, always there. But you know, you need a transition. This team was built for that Lob City era, and they had, you know, a couple of years where it looked like they may have been, you know, contending. They may have had a chance. And that one series against the Rockets sticks out. But it just didn't happen.
What were your thoughts on the loss of DeAndre, Rob?
It was rough. I think it made sense. Again, you know, they are trying to go a different direction. You know, he wanted a big contract. The Clippers didn't really want to tie up cap space long term. From what I've heard, if the Clippers had offered him an extension for several years for, like, the rest of his, you know, prime, and he's already kind of at the end of it, but for, you know, his early 30s, if they'd offered him that even well below the max, he would have taken it. But they did not want to tie up their cap space long term. They didn't really want to bring him back on a 1 year deal just for him to leave again next summer. So they decided to pivot, and, you know, I think it made sense. But, you know, I think he was underrated most of his time with the Clippers, at least most of the time in the Lob City era. His offense, you know, people always forget just how valuable those rim-running centers are. His ability to just clear space because teams are so threatened by his finishing around the basket really, really, really helped the Clippers' offense. It was a big reason why they were a top five offense for, you know, all those years. It's because it really created a lot of gravity and pulled guys to the center of the floor. It opened up space for J.J. Redick and Jamal Crawford and the Clippers' shooters to get open. And obviously, I mean, once he gets the ball within 5 feet of the basket, it's probably going to be a dunk or a foul. And while his foul shooting was not good, it actually improved the last couple of years. And even so, it still racks up fouls. You know, he makes even one of them. That's still, you know, not a horrible points per possession. So, I mean, he's a really big loss. Honestly, I think he's a bigger loss on offense than on defense, where in the past couple of years, he faded a little bit defensively. He's still obviously much, much, much better on that. And then Marcin Gortat, if for nothing else than the fact that, I mean, he's one of the best rebounders in the NBA, and that's really important. So the Clippers are taking a big hit. As a rebounder, they're taking hit rim protection-wise. He wasn't great at switching out on the perimeter, but he was still, you know, more swift-footed than Marcin Gortat. Big loss in offensive rebounding capabilities in terms of putbacks, lob threat, all that kind of stuff. It was a very big downgrade. And I think, honestly, that's the biggest reason why the Clippers won't make the playoffs. I think if you had DeAndre Jordan on this team just straight up instead of Marcin Gortat, I think they would actually – I'd have them maybe not as favorites to make the playoffs, but I think they'd have pretty good odds to make the seventh or eighth seed. But I mean, I think the drop off from him to Gortat is, like, you know, five, six, seven wins maybe. you know, he's probably not like an all-star level player anymore. And he just made it the year before, but he is very, very good still. And the Clippers are going to miss a lot of what he brought.
For sure. Like you said, not only, you know, defensively in the rebounding, but the vertical spacing he provides the offense, kind of just attracting everyone to the middle. But getting to the prediction portion of the show, starting five on opening night, who you got?
I think it's I wouldn't say obvious, but I think it's going to be Pat Beverly, Avery Bradley, Tobias Harris, Danilo Gallinari, Marcin Gortat.
Yeah, I think it's going to be – actually, I think that would be my starting lineup as well. Yeah, same thing.
Yeah, same thing over here. I think it's likely to change because there'll probably be an injury or two, but I think going to the season, that's what it's going to be. Any position battles in terms of the starting lineup or rotation-wise?
I think there are several. I think if healthy, Gallinari and Harris will start at the forward positions. They're pretty safe. But center is interesting because, as I said earlier, Montrezl Harrell is just much better than Marcin Gortat. I mean, he was unbelievable last year off the bench for the Clippers. For as much talk as Lou Williams got for being, you know, the sixth man of the year, and he was, I mean, he should have been an all-star, Montrezl Harrell was one of the better bench players in the NBA last year as well. He seemingly got better and more unstoppable each month as the year went along. Just so good at finishing, at getting to the basket. His one-man fast breaks were honestly one of the biggest highlights of the year. Going back to highlights, just he puts his head down, he just charges up the court, and he really can't dribble very much, but it just seemed like nobody could stop him. And he gets a little bit blinded by the basket at times. You know, there are times where he could pass out, and he just goes up in traffic and loses it or gets blocked or whatever. But he was so good last year, and he's better defensively than Gortat as well. His weakness is he's kind of undersized, so the rebounding isn't great, but he makes up for it in other areas. So, and I think if the Clippers wanted to put out their best starting lineup, they would start him instead. But I do think Harrell's a guy whose effectiveness will kind of diminish the more you use him, and especially in starting lineups against these big star centers. Like, I just don't know how effective he'd be against Joel Embiid or Karl Anthony Towns or Anthony Davis or any of these guys. I just don't know, and I think he'd still honestly be pretty effective, but I think it would take a toll on him. I think he'd lose a lot of that manic energy, which is what he really brought last year. So I think bringing him off the bench is smart, but if Gortat is really bad, I think they might have to make the swap at some point, and that could happen. And then at guard, I mean, Lou Williams is probably the best guard on the roster, but again, last year he played better off the bench. I think it just makes more sense to keep him off the bench, but I mean, he's going to play more minutes than Avery Bradley, I hope, anyway, because he's much better. And I think he's probably going to play more minutes than Pat Beverly. There is – the real issue is going to be how do they work Shai Gilgeous-Alexander into the rotation? Because if you go just by who's better this year, I think the reserve guard rotation will be Williams and Milos Teodosic. But for one thing, that's horrible defensively, just absolute nightmarish on that end of the court. And the other is you really want to get your rookies, especially Shai, who, again, no offense to Jerome, but I think is just quite a bit better than him as a prospect. I mean, you want to get him minutes. And I personally think they should play Shai over Milos to start the season. I think at some point, Teodosic is probably going to get traded. I think there's still rumors the Suns are looking for a point guard. I think Teodosic has been linked to them. I think it's a very obvious trade. So I don't know how long he's going to be with the team. I mean, they profess that they like him a lot. And when you look back at last year, they played much, much better with him in the lineup. Just his shooting and his passing really unlocked a lot of things for them. And as bad as he looked by the eye test, I don't think advanced metrics had his defense as being like that much more of a negative impact than other guys. But I mean, I personally think Shai should get more minutes. If it were up to me, I would start him from the start of the season over Avery Bradley. But I don't think there's any way that actually happens.
Any position battles from you, Corey?
I mean, I think I definitely can see the Harrell over Gortat, simply because Harrell, as you said, brings so much energy. But I have the same kind of concern. Like, I don't know how he holds up if he's playing a boatload of minutes at the center to start off the game. You know, how does he – he's only 6'8". You know, how does he, you know, handle a full game of Joel Embiid or DeMarcus Cousins? You know, any of these big-time centers. But I could definitely see that because Gortat, I mean, honestly, if the Wizards had some better options at center, I don't think he would have played as much as he did last year. Now, so I could definitely see that. And then, you know, I feel like there's definitely an argument that could be made for Lou Williams starting over Avery Bradley, because Avery Bradley obviously was tremendous during his tenure in Boston, and last year he was kind of hurt, and he had, like, you know, all the domestic issues he had off the floor. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, that was a separate headache, and he never looked good last year. He just was so inconsistent. Now, who knows, you know, what plays a part into that fully. But I wouldn't be shocked if he lost his starting role, but I kind of feel like it's just this, that Harrell and Gortat battle that you can really pinpoint as something that could be changing down the line.
Who would be your breakout starter for next season?
Of the guys who I listed as starters, I guess Tobias Harris, but I feel like he already kind of broke out. You know, once he got traded to the Clippers, I think people started to realize how good he was. So I'm going to say if Harrell basically ends up starting, I think Harrell, because even though I think people saw how good he was last year, I don't think he was quite fully appreciated. So I'm going to say, even if he doesn't end up technically starting, just in terms of the minutes he plays, I think it'll be Harrell. I really wish it was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, though, but yeah.
Now, for me, it's Tobias Harris. Even though he did take a jump last year, I think there's more to his game that he can elevate. Obviously, he's going to be 26. I'm thinking this year that he actually breaks the 20 per game mark. You know, I think the shooting numbers are solid. You know, 47% from the field last year, 41% from three. I'm just expecting him to take another leap, to be more of a vocal point. There's at times where he'd have, like, really hot first halves and kind of cool down in the second half. I'm just expecting him to be a more aggressive and complete player this upcoming year.
I'm going to go with Tobias. You know, like you guys mentioned, he did boost up last season, but I think there's another level for him to hit. And in fact, it's a contract year. And I think he turned down a pretty big offer from the Clippers already. So I think he's looking to get paid. And the only way to do that is to produce on the court.
Yeah, he turned down a 4-year, $80 million extension.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a chance he could definitely get more next summer, depending on what happens, his production this year. And like Corey mentioned, you know, being more consistent for four quarters and being aggressive and taking advantage of some of those matchups. And it's a big opportunity for him. Like we mentioned, there's not a ton of offensive options, a ton of, you know, star players in this team or anything, so he can really step up. But breakout bench player for the Clippers.
I'm gonna say Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I mean, it's hard to say he's a breakout because he's a rookie, but generally rookies, even if they put up numbers, aren't actually very good and don't really help their teams win. I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, because of his defensive capabilities, which we saw some of in Summer League. I know it's Summer League, but he has really long arms. You mentioned the wingspan. Now he has really good instincts, and I think he's going to be a positive impact player from basically day one. I think he's really going to surprise a lot of people with how good he is from the very start of his playing career. So I think he's the breakout guy.
For me, I'm going to say Montrezl Harrell. I love the energy. I love the tenacity. And I think he's going to be the breakout bench player. And I actually am going to now – I'm pushed over the edge. I think at some point this season he will play – starting minutes at the center over top of Gortat because of his play off the bench.
Yeah, Montrezl Harrell for me as well. Like you guys mentioned, all the reasons why and the fact that Gortat isn't going to be putting out big minutes anyway, so there's going to be plenty of minutes to go around. And what he showed last season, I think he can improve even a little bit more. But getting to the win talk, best case scenario in terms of wins, best case scenario for the Clippers next year?
Wins, I'd probably say 48. I think if everything goes well, if they stay healthy, which is asking a lot because they have a lot of, you know, guys who are kind of not elderly, but they have a lot of guys who are in the middle of their primes or towards the end of them and guys who are injury prone, especially Gallinari. But if they're healthy and if their young guys, you know, take steps forward, if Harris becomes that 20-point per game scorer and is able to up some of his other qualities, if Harrell's able to play 25 plus minutes a game without losing his effectiveness, if Shai is able to be, you know, a pretty good rookie right off the bat, I think 48 is doable. Honestly, they could probably win more if all that happens, but I think 48 is a pretty realistic best-case scenario. I think you could draw more outlandish best-case scenarios, like Shai wins Rookie of the Year, you know, by, you know, completely overtaking Bradley as a starter or whatever. I don't think that's likely to happen, though. So I think realistically their best case is 48 wins in the eighth seed.
I think their best case scenario is 45 wins. That's them staying healthy and, you know, Tobias Harris taking a jump. Avery Bradley gets back to Boston Celtics. Avery Bradley. Lou Williams remains this freak scorer off the bench, sixth man of the year type caliber player. And, you know, I think it's – everything's got to go right for this team to be a 45-plus win team. And I think they'd be a playoff team with, you know, between a 7 or an 8 seed. They'd be in the discussion.
Yeah, best case for me is 44 wins, and that's not because I don't think the Clippers are, you know, a solid team. I think just the West is so good, and there's so many teams you're going to have to match up with every night, and they don't really necessarily have the stars to match up. They do have some solid players, but I think, you know, maybe right on the cusp of the playoffs, maybe squeezing in as 8 seed is best case scenario. What would be worst case scenario?
I mean, I think not the worst case scenario in terms of wins. I mean, in terms of wins, I think the worst case scenario would be and I think if it gets ugly, they have a really, really, really difficult schedule to start the season. And if they do not do well, or if they have guys who are injured, I think they could be having a fire sale by the start of the, you know, the 2019 calendar. And if they do that, then, I mean, I think they could finish as low as, like, the high 20s. But I think the worst case scenario of the season is that they're, like, a mid-30 wins team that never really threatens for the playoffs and doesn't really get a super high draft pick. Again, you know, they get like the 10th or 11th pick and they're kind of stuck in the middle again. And I think that is the worst thing scenario that could happen. But in terms of wins, I mean, I think there's definitely a scenario where they win like 28 games because they end up selling their veterans and the other guys are injured. And it's just I can see a really bad win total happening.
Yeah, my worst case scenario is 31 wins. And that's, you know, that's somebody getting dealt, that's somebody getting hurt possibly. And this team just kind of sputtering in the wrong direction. And, you know, then us questioning was, you know, what's the direction? And is Doc Rivers the right guy to kind of do this retool? Because Doc Rivers doesn't generally do rebuilds. You know, the retool is a little bit different than a rebuild. So for me, it's 31 wins and this team kind of changing direction.
Yeah, I think worst case, 30 wins. But also, like Rob said, if they're caught in between where they don't get a high pick and they're kind of get one of those later lottery picks that doesn't really help them. And, you know, things, they're kind of cursed with injuries like they were the previous season. Hopefully that doesn't happen. What's your actual prediction for the Clippers next year?
My actual prediction is kind of a worst case scenario for me, which is, you know, why I did not want them to do this retool competitive thing that they ended up doing. I understand why. I mean, I think, you know, in terms of retaining the LA market and keeping at least some of the fans that they had during the Lob City era, trying to remain competitive, remain fun, remain an exciting team to watch night in and night out, they were that last year. I honestly think, you know, bias aside, they're probably one of the, maybe not five most fun teams to watch, but they were up there. I mean, they were really, really fun to watch last year. And I think with reasonable health, they will be this year too. They have a ton of super likable, fun players. But I just, the lack of star power will really hit them. And, you know, especially if even one or two of their guys get injured, I mean, they're pretty deep. So, you know, if Gallinari gets injured, Luke and Mike Scott can play more minutes, but it's not quite the same. So I think my actual prediction is like 37 wins, which again is basically my worst case scenario. They get like the 11th pick in the draft. They don't get a game changer there. They're not really that close to making the playoffs. You know, like they finish 7 or 8 games back, which really is not close at all, at the least. Honestly, in the West this year, it's so stacked, it might be, I think 47 or 48 might be the 8th seed. So, I mean, I think they're headed straight for my middle nightmare, which would not be very good. So, yeah, I'm saying 37 wins.
I'm one higher than you. I'm saying 38, but it's the same thing there. There's some games that look really competitive. They may be in the conversation for an 8 seed, you know, when it comes to the All-Star weekend. But this team finishes somewhere between the 10 and 12 range in the Western Conference.
Yeah, pretty much same thing Corey said, 38 wins, you know. Just the West is very tough, and they don't have the guys that separate them. But the most important question of the show, the truth, what emoji represents the Clippers for you?
I'm not a real emoji person. I think the shrug emoji.
This has been the most popular one throughout the previous series.
Really? I'm corny. Oh no. I was gonna say if there was like a like the cooking thing, you know, the chef thing that Harden does with like the ladle. I would say that because you know, that kind of summarizes like Lou Williams to me. But yeah, and I think they're kind of like they don't care what other people think about them. You know, they have faith in themselves. And I think that's kind of best represented by the shrug. I'm not an emoji. I don't have like a reel of them off the top of my head. If there was one that was like very confident, maybe like the 100 emoji too. Like they keep it 100. That could also work because I've spent some time in their locker room and they're all like very they're a pretty blunt group. So I'll switch my answer. They're 100.
I like it. What do you got, Corey?
The sick emoji, the green face. He's like about to puke. Cause I just think this team is like, it's like right on the middle line where they could be competitive or they could just be really bad because of injuries. Like if Gallinari gets hurt, Gortat gets hurt, you know, one of the guards between Bradley or even Beverly again, or Lou Williams, this team is just not going to be good, especially in the Western Conference. So I'm holding my bowels down.
That's a little savage, but I got the eyes emoji, and that's because I'm looking at this season, but I'm looking forward to next year with the offseason. You know, I think it's important for them. I don't know if you have an idea in mind, but what do you think they have to do to attract a big free agent next offseason? Because I know
again part of why they want to remain competitive. I don't know how, you know, they obviously know the minds of NBA players much, much more than I do, like infinitely more. You know, to me, seeing a team that finishes with 39 wins and not the playoffs instead of like 32 wins and not the playoffs, I wouldn't care between those, especially since so many of their players are going to be free agents next year. I mean, to me, the most important thing and the reason why I didn't like bringing back Avery Bradley in particular is that the most attractive thing that could happen to them is if one of the rookies has a breakout year, and that won't happen if they don't get minutes. So to me, like, you know, if Shea or Jerome, I keep saying Shea, but theoretically it could be Jerome too. If one of them has, you know, not Donovan Mitchell, because asking that is completely unrealistic. But, you know, if Shea Gilgeous-Alexander has a year where he averages like 11, 3, and 6 as a starter, or Jerome scores like 13 points off the bench with good efficiency, free agents might look at that and be like, wow, they have good young players. Like, you know, in a few years, they might be really good. We might sign up for this. But, I mean, I just don't think that trying to be, like, you know, a low 40 wins team is really going to be all that attractive. I mean, again, I think one of the reasons why Doc Rivers is still around is, I mean, obviously he wants to be. He's Doc Rivers. If he didn't want to be here, he wouldn't be here. So I don't think that's really an issue. But I think, you know, one reason why the Clippers want to retain him is that, you know, for all the grief that he's taken from the media over the years, he's still one of the most revered coaches in the NBA. Guys want to play for Doc Rivers. And, I mean, I think that is a free agent draw. Jerry West is obviously a really big free agent draw. Steve Ballmer, a guy who's not doesn't interfere too much and is willing to spend money on his team, is nice. And I think they have kind of some of the front office elements together. You know, the question is whether they have those young players, you know, if Tobias Harris takes that step forward and they're able to, you know, come to terms on like a wink, wink extension with him where, you know, he stays with the team. And if they have him in place and a couple of their young guys break out, then you start getting attractive. But, you know, if it's just a bunch of like decent veterans on like a 37 win team, I just don't know how attractive that is. And, you know, one of the guys who I thought they would go after, Kevin Love, signed a big extension with the Cavs. So that took one name off the table, though. And they could still trade for him, which I think is a possibility, actually. The guy who I kind of have my eye on is Kemba Walker, who I think is a very Doc Rivers, Jerry West kind of player, and who I think would be a real nice fit in LA. Like, he's super personable. He's super fun. And I think, you know, for him personally, it would make a lot of marketing sense to come to LA, even if it's not the Lakers. He's kind of my number one target at this point, especially since Beverly Teodosic contracts are going to be up. And while Shea is more of a point guard, I think he could play alongside Kemba. But yeah, I mean, I think if they want to try to attract free agents, they need to play their rookies and hope they stand out.
Gotcha. It's always tough being the little brother to the Lakers. I'm a Nets fan, so I get the same vibe with the Knicks. So
yeah. It's not great.
Yeah, it's definitely annoying. But, you know, maybe that'll change this offseason. League pass rating, though, for the Clippers, 1 through 10.
Oh, I'd say like an 8. Maybe even – I mean, I don't know. I'm probably biased, but Lou Williams is one of the most fun players to watch in the NBA for me. Montrezl Harrell was one of the most fun players to watch last year. Pat Beverly is always super entertaining. You know, I think they have three guys right there who are just very fun. Tobias Harris is maybe not like a big name draw, but again, a guy who's like a workman, like, you know, 20 point per game scorer. When he gets hot, I mean, and he's hitting those threes, it's pretty scary. You know, I think the rookies, if they get playing time, will be pretty fun to watch. Again, not super high in Jerome, but he's the kind of like high scoring young guard, you know, who could just erupt for 30 points on a random game in like January. And I think they're going to be very fun to watch next year. I don't know how good they'll be, but they'll be pretty fun.
My rating's a lot lower, but that's just me. I'm going with a 4. Cool. I mean, I don't have a lot of interest in teams that I think are borderline playoff teams. It's just me personally. And also, I'm an East Coast guy. I go to bed by 10 o'clock. Mm. So for me to want to stay up and watch a Clippers game just doesn't seem necessarily that likely. If they're playing the Pacers, which is my squad, then I'll probably watch both those games, obviously. But Lou Williams is intriguing to watch. I think if Harrell takes a step, he's intriguing to watch. I think I like Tobias Harris, so I'd like to see him do better. But aside of those three guys, there's just not a lot that brings interest to me in this Clippers team.
I'm going to go with a 6.5. So I'm kind of in the middle of you guys. You know, I think the fact that they're going to be competitive in a lot of close games makes them more entertaining. Nobody wants to watch a blowout. And Lou Will, when he catches fire, is probably one of the most fun players to watch in the NBA. But what TV show would you watch over the Clippers? Obviously a hypothetical, but what would it be?
So is this like a TV show that's live right now? Or
it can be an old TV show, new TV show, Netflix original. You know, people who don't watch TV shows have used other sporting events. So pretty much whatever you watch, want, that's on television.
I'm going to go with It's Always Sunny.
It's a good choice. It's a
good show. That is a good choice.
What do you got, Corey?
For me, I'm going with Orange is the New Black. Mm. They're on season 5, I think. It's getting like a little bit over the top. I watched like the first episode of the new season a couple nights ago, and I was like, wow, like we're just really pushing it. Just, I don't know. It's growing old to me, but I probably still watch that over the Clippers.
I used that about like 10 teams ago, but I went with Stranger Things just because, you know, I think it's a good show, but Clippers are pretty good too. So I think they're right around this, you know, same level here. But any last thoughts you guys want to get on the Clippers?
I mean, I would, again, keep an eye on the trade market. Mm-hmm. You know, again, doesn't seem like you guys will be watching all that much of the Clippers. but if you keep an eye on the standings, I think if they don't do well in their opening stretch, which I think is relatively likely, I think you could start seeing trades happen sooner rather than later. I think Milos is obviously the first guy who comes to mind, but I think they could flip Gortat. You know, they might have to add an asset or two to get some team to take him on. But, I mean, again, he's a stopgap guy who can play some minutes for a good team. You know, I think there's a possibility they flip Pat Beverly, even though they really like him. He's also on an expiring. He's also good, tough. Every team wants a Pat Beverly. I think, honestly, a lot of their vets are really tradable. The only ones who really aren't are, I think Bradley's contract is kind of high for what he brings unless he really – you know, returns to that Boston form, and Gallinari is overpaid and, you know, injury prone. But I mean, I think they could be one of the biggest fire sale teams in the NBA if they are not good in January or February approaching the trade deadline.
That's a really good point. They do have a lot of veterans on, you know, expiring deals or small deals where they could help a playoff team or a contending team, and it's just one piece on the bench or something along those lines. And they don't have a true direction, so getting some young assets could always benefit them. Any last thoughts on the Clippers from you, Corey?
No. I'm okay.
Well, that wraps it up, Rob. Big thanks for hopping on for the first time. Tell everyone where they can find you on Twitter and find your work.
So my Twitter handle is RichHomieFlom. A bit of a dated reference, you know, to Rich Homie Quan, the rapper. Not really a thing anymore.
I would give that a 10 on a Twitter handle.
People really like it, but it's a little bit dated. You know, I'm showing my age here. But yeah, that's my Twitter handle, Rich Homie Flom. It's very phonetic. And then my work can mostly be found at Clips Nation. Again, I'm the managing editor there. We're starting our previews for players probably in a couple weeks. And we're gonna start with the we go from like the worst to the best, or kind of the guys who play the least to the most. So it's probably gonna start out with guys like Juwan Evans and Sedarius Thornwell if they're still on the team then. And then I also write for Blazers Edge, which is the Blazers SB Nation blog. Currently I'm signed up to write for the Basketball Index for the Bucks, which hasn't quite started yet. But yep, my work can be found at all those places, but mostly Clips Nation stuff. And my Twitter account is mostly Clippers with some hip-hop stuff and occasional movie TV stuff. So if you don't care about any of that, then just follow for the Clippers and ignore everything.
Sweet.
All right, as always, Corey, big thanks for hopping on. Thank everybody for listening. You can check out the show on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. Everybody have a great day.
Peace out, knuckleheads.